Developmental Alternatives with Women for a New Era, OIDON, is a network of feminist scholars, researchers and activists from the economic south working for economic and gender justice and sustainable and democratic development. This recording is done by Dawn as a way of sharing its feminist critical analysis of the global environment through the voices of women from the south. Other recordings are available for download at www.dawnnet.org and may be used freely following proper citation. Dawn Podcasts, the voices of women creating a just world.
Welcome everybody. I'm Lizeth Dukanesinghe and I'm from Fiji. Just before I start my presentation, I would like to take this time to acknowledge a few people that's helped me to reorganize my thoughts for the presentation, and also work that I've taken some of the work to for this presentation. And that's Claire Rowland from the International Women's Development Agency in Australia, the Gigi Pacific Training Institute, Merlin Nambuliwo, Maureen Pendjueli, and this team as well. Okay, so my topic today is Will Pay Surplus Trade Women's Rights Away? Sorry. I'll go through the Pacific Island, the characteristics of our economy in the Pacific, and if that will lead to obstacles to trade. I'll also go into pay surplus, whether after going through the characteristics, we'll see if that is an obstacle to trade in the Pacific, also for women, and also towards a new trade agenda, something to challenge the current economic paradigm that we're currently under. Okay, slide. That's the Pacific region. There are 14 independent Pacific Island countries. All 14 Pacific Island countries are members of the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat, which sits at the center of a network of organizations that provide the institutional framework for regional cooperation across a range of social, political, and social concerns in the Pacific. Australia and New Zealand are also part of this network, the Forum Secretariat. They're also one of the founding members, and that sometimes also creates certain tensions within the role of the Pacific Island Forum Secretariat plus its members. Okay, slide. Oh, no, sorry, go back. Some of the characteristics are we're very small in size. We include some of the world's smallest microstates and the smallest populated region. The smallest populated island is Niue. That's beside Tonga. Between Tonga, right. They have 2,000 people in their country, in their island, and the largest being Papua New Guinea, just north of Australia. They account for 6.3 million people of the total of 8.3 million of the total population in the Pacific. Now, our smallness means that we already have a small market, we have diseconomies of scale, and we have a scarcity of skilled manpower. We're also very isolated. Even between us, we're isolated, and more importantly, isolated from our main export markets and suppliers of imports. And our isolation and remoteness from markets includes high transportation and communication costs, unreliable transport services, which leads to unreliable supply, and infrequent or irregular transport supply, which leads to additional costs of production. We're also very vulnerable. Three of our Pacific Island nations, Kiribati, Tuvalu, and Marshall Islands, consist entirely of coral atolls, and with a maximum height of only a few meters above sea level. Now, that means that they're vulnerable to any change of sea level rise, and more importantly, climate change. And if it does continue to rise, that means a displacement of these people from their indigenous communities, and means relocating to other islands. We're happy to take them, but I don't think they're so happy to be taken away from their own homeland. We also have very fragile ecosystems in the Pacific Islands, and we're also susceptible to natural disasters such as tropical cyclones. And very lately, we've been having tsunamis, and also we're very politically unstable in the region. We do have gender concerns. In a report released by AusAid in 2008, there were high levels of violence found in the Melanesian region, just beside Australia that way, and East Timor. And I quote, violence against women is severe, pervasive, and it does constrain development. We also have very low representation of women in national legislature bodies, and there's only 6.4% of seats held by women, and that excludes the territories. These are the trade negotiations that's happening in the Pacific at the moment. I'll just focus on PICTA, PESA, and EPA. PICTA is the Pacific Islands countries trade agreement. That's the agreement that was negotiated only between the island nations that excludes Australia and New Zealand. Now, because the island nations negotiated that free trade just to show their donor countries or developed nations that we were moving along with the times, moving along towards globalization, and we weren't so far behind or laid back as we're normally referred to. Because of that, because we excluded Australia and New Zealand, they weren't too happy, rightly so, because they were one of the founding members of the Pacific Islands Forum Secretariat. So they decided that they had to have an agreement, a trade agreement, which includes them. And that's known as PESA, which is Pacific Islands Agreement on Closer Economic Relations with Australia, New Zealand, and the islands. There's a clause in that agreement, which is a trigger clause, that says that if any of the island nations negotiate a trade agreement with a third developed nation, that would trigger the PESA to a PESA Plus agreement, which would be a free trade agreement. And that was triggered in 2007 by Fiji and Papua New Guinea negotiating an interim EPA, Economic Partnership Agreement, with the EU, just so that they don't lose their canned fisheries and sugar market. Okay, sorry. All right. This is one of the quotes from a young woman activist, part of the Fiji Women's Rights Movement, Naima Khan, at the GIJ consultation. The actual trade itself, trade and economics, is a male-dominated area. Whether it is due to the socialization of women or the way our patriarchal societies are set up, women may not view themselves as participants in economic discussions, and as a profession, girls do not generally become economists. Women in the government are not ministers of finance, but rather ministers of women or community development, and those making economic decisions are mostly men. Even within the state machinery, ministers for women, welfare, health, education, and those who provide social services are not included in the formulation of policies. The second one is by Jane Kelsey. She's a hardcore opponent of free trade agreements in the Pacific. She's also a lecturer at the University of Auckland. And she says, we have to start asserting that trade is not just men's stuff. It is treated conceptually as something that men do because women perceive the world differently. And are there ways that we can think about trade from a feminist perspective that bridge the economic and social, and also hope to bridge the local to the regional to the global level? Now, we are currently preparing to negotiate a regional free trade agreement with Australia and New Zealand, known as PESA Plus. Now, this agreement will impact men and women in different ways. And already Pacific women experience multiple inequalities that influence their participation in social and economic life, including limited access to and control of economic resources, such as land and credit, education, information, and decision-making rights. For instance, a scoping study by AusAid in 2008 called Women in Business in the Solomon Islands, anecdotal evidence suggests that even when women meet the eligibility criteria, they're perceived as too great a credit risk, experience inexplicably long days in the application process, or are asked to identify male guarantors. The manufacturing sector in the Pacific currently faces many barriers to sustainability, including high costs of imported inputs, small production capacities, and in the case of textile industry, the focus on cost-driven labor-intensive, low-skill, and low-technology production. Lowering tariffs through PESA Plus will further limit options for growth in larger-scale manufacturing. Now, as women comprise much of the labor force in export-oriented manufacturing operations, they will bear the brunt of production closures. And in Fiji, between 4,500 to 5,000 women are currently employed in the inefficient textile industry. Their income is estimated to affect as many as 25,000 people. Now, the proposed reduction of tariffs through PESA Plus and the influx of cheaper Australian and New Zealand products will likely result in factory closures and very significant job losses, most of which jobs currently held by women. Okay. Now, to land, Why is land so important to women in the Pacific? Well, it is because it's the role of women as the cultural mediators, as the educators, as the conduit of knowledge from past to future generations. It is about women in relation to land as the caretakers, the guardians of the well-being of generations. Now, in the Solomon Islands, although it is mostly matrilineal and women inherit customary land, decisions over customary land management are made primarily by men, and foreign operators view male chiefs as the relevant custodians to approach in seeking rights to land use. Traditional attitudes regarding male dominance and customary family roles hamper Pacific women's equal participation in economic and political life. With those kind of problems that we face already, will free trade agreement, will opening up investment improve women's life? We don't know. Okay, slide. And in the services sector of our economy, many services in the Pacific are provided by the public sector, and they're linked to the protection of our fundamental human rights. What will privatization mean for women? A principal goal of free trade is to open up service sectors, including healthcare, to foreign competition. For instance, what will the effect of privatized health services be on maternal mortality? We have more than 300 islands in Fiji, but there is not a health center on every island. It is unlikely that private sector interests will provide the full range of affordable and accessible public health services that Pacific Island countries require, especially for rural population. Slide. These are concerns by three people. The first one is from our chief trade advisor for the Pacific Island countries. He negotiates on behalf of the Pacific Island countries with developed nations on any trade agreement. And he says the pressure to negotiate a WTO-compatible agreement is coming from Australia and New Zealand rather than the farm countries themselves. Now, a little bit of history on the two below. The top, Faye Turvey, is the Secretary General of the Pacific Conference of Churches. Now, he was part of a workshop that was organized by another NGO in Fiji called the Ecumenical Center for Research, Education, and Advocacy. That was organized, and the theme was globalization and trade and investment in Fiji. Now, at the time, many CSOs were struggling to comprehend issues of free trade and globalization, technicalities and politics, and more importantly, the impacts of free trade on communities, resources, and small vulnerable economies of the Pacific. Now, there was a glaring concern regarding lack of public consultation and lack of critical studies on impacts of agreements. Now, this saw the birth of Pacific Network on Globalization, also known as PANG. Now, he says that a new World Trade Organization new WTO compatible FTA free trade agreement with Australia and New Zealand would potentially be disastrous for the Pacific. And the lady at the bottom, that's Maureen Penjoli, that's the coordinator of the Pacific Network on Globalization, who's been the face of or maybe the face of resistance to free trade in the Pacific, who says that PESA Plus is all about the political priorities for Australia and has nothing to do with the development needs of the Pacific. Okay, go ahead. So what do we need to do? Now, after the GIDGE training in September last year, we had to figure out, you know, what were the alternatives to free trade? What was the alternative to PESA Plus? Can we learn from other regions, other region models that's working alternatives? Can we learn from the other region models for the regional trade processes that are working? And we should also protect our domestic industries where there's more employment and more women participation. We've also decided that we support developing countries' capacity to assess the gender dimensions of trade policies through country case studies and training of policymakers and trade negotiators, including the involvement of NGO and CSO, and also to provide a systematic gender analysis on every sector of the economy before negotiating a free trade agreement. We also would like to have a policy that's put in place for support for equal access and ownership of resources of both land and sea for women. And we also like to support the empowerment and voices of Pacific women to confront aspects of our culture that are hampering our development and autonomy. We do know that trade is important in the Pacific. We do know that it's important for our economic growth. But is free trade really the solution for us in the Pacific? Thank you.
Development Alternatives for Women for a New Era, or DAWN, is a network of feminist scholars, researchers and activists from the economic South working for economic and gender justice and sustainable and democratic development. This recording is done by DAWN as a way of sharing its feminist critical analysis of the global environment through the voices of women from the South. Other recordings are available for download at www.dawnnet.org and may be used freely following proper citation. DAWN Podcasts, the voices of women creating a just world.